Good morning. It is fall. It is football season. It is, things are going, and it's good to be back. I just kind of in the attitude of what I'm going to be talking about in a minute, I want you to know that church is not really about what I'm doing right now, and it's not important mostly for you to hear me speak. It's mostly important for you to meet with Jesus, right? It's mostly important for you to gather with his saints. If I get to be a part of you meeting with Jesus and gathering with his saints, that's great, but it's not built around me. I don't function as Jesus for you, but it's good to be back nonetheless. Coming up soon in February, you know what happens every February? Not just Valentine's Day, not just the Super Bowl, some of you are in football mode, but Night to Shine's coming up, and that's part of who we are, right? Right? Okay, yeah, our church has a deep connection to celebrating folks that maybe everyone else, the rest of the world, doesn't necessarily celebrate, because we feel like that's what Jesus would have us to do, because we see that taught and modeled in his ministry, and so we want to follow in his footsteps there. So Night to Shine is something we do. I don't know if you knew this, but it takes quite a bit of money to pull that off, and it's time to start building up the expense account of Night to Shine. So as you are thinking about how God would want you to walk in the ways of Jesus with generosity, in addition to giving, in addition to tithing, in addition to supporting all the other charities you do, there's an opportunity in our new giving form for you to designate toward Night to Shine. Or for you to, you think, I don't have any extra dollars to spare, but I've got some hours that I could spare. Think about volunteering, okay? That's coming up soon, and it takes a whole bunch of people. And we can't, actually, Allsbury, we can't do it all internally. We rely on lots of help and lots of donations from outside. So if you have no money to give, but you can help rally other people, that is a tremendous help as well. I would be happy to put you in contact with the best person to help you help Night to Shine go well, okay? So you can check in with me, you can check in with anyone in staff, or the director this year is Susan Dodson. If you know her, you can get in contact with her. Okay, now, wrapping up a series called Church Explained today. And I had a great question last week. I went to church in a suburb of Vancouver, and there was a 16-year-old son of immigrants who didn't, his parents still had the accent of where they grew up. He sounded thoroughly Canadian. And he's, after he had heard, you know, went through the worship service, they have a fellowship time with food afterward. And I had just talked about, from Matthew 28, about the importance of actually putting what Jesus taught into practice. Very much like stuff I would say here. I don't know that it went very well, just judging from the people's faces, and it could be different context, different, you know, whatever else. I wasn't as funny as I thought I am. All those things went wrong. But this 16-year-old, he has this burning question. And it is, do I have to go to church to be a Christian? And I'm thinking, if my 16-year-old, almost 16-year-old, asked me that, I know exactly where he's going, right? I know exactly. And so I'm thinking about this guy's parents. And so I'm thinking, yes, you have to go to church. It doesn't matter what you think, right? You know, that's what I'm thinking. But it's a good question. But to answer the question, we have to ask the question, what's a church? And that's kind of hard to answer. I don't know if you think about it. You might think, well, obviously, it's the building that has a steeple on it. I don't know if you noticed, but this building doesn't have a steeple. That one next to us does, and we don't meet there. So does that mean we're not a church? So many of the New Testament writings are addressed to churches and tell us about churches, but Jesus didn't, like, start what we think of as church in any sort of obvious way. Now, he had everything that he taught and modeled is what we're trying to do, but he didn't come into a synagogue and take it over. Like, this building is now a church, and we're not going to meet on Saturdays. We're going to meet on Sundays, and we're gonna sing all the old hymns, and, you know, and we're going to whatever. We're going to have a 45-minute sermon. He didn't do that. So how do we get the idea of a church? And by the way, my big question today that I want to help you answer is church membership biblical? Because Aylesbury Baptist Church, we want folks who are going to be around here for a while. If you're going to live in the area and you're going to drop in here, it would be our preference that you would become members officially. So where did we get that idea? So I've got a main expectation and then an application, okay? The main expectation, if you're taking notes, and again, I am always happy to share my printed notes or email you a PDF copy of my notes. I'm happy to share. But the main expectation that I think I see in the teachings of Jesus that I'm going to read here in a few minutes from Matthew 16 and Matthew 18 is if you're committed to Jesus, you need to be committed to his people. Jesus was pretty straightforward. If you're committed to him, you need to be committed to his people because he makes his disciples into a family, and family doesn't just stray and ignore one another, at least families that are functioning well. They stay together and they look after one another. So one of the clearest applications I can think of is to invest yourself as a church member, okay? So I'm looking at the idea that Jesus expects his followers to be committed to one another, and I'm saying this might not be the only application. You might be able to come up with an application that fits your life. Maybe. I'm saying one of the best applications of his expectation that if you love him, you will love his people in particular, not just kind of abstractly, is that you should invest yourself as a church member. That's my thing. Or in terms of our values, it would be we should become an authentic family. Okay? So if you're not a member of Aylesbury Baptist Church and you're listening this morning, I'm trying to persuade you to become a member of Aylesbury Baptist Church. Okay, she's in already. Just like that. I love it. Okay, we can go home. I'm just kidding. I've got too much in me to stop there. Matthew 16, I'm going to start reading in verse 13, okay? Matthew 16, I'm in the NIV today. Matthew 16, starting in verse 13. And I picked two passages from Matthew because they're the only times that we have in all four Gospels where Jesus uses the Greek word that we have translated as church in our Bibles. So some people would say, well, if Jesus only used the word church in two places in all four Gospels, then he clearly didn't care about the church. When we read this, you'll see he cares about the church. He just didn't use the language that the later disciples started to use as much. But they got the idea from Jesus, okay? Matthew 16, starting verse 13, it says, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? And if you remember, I read this in the first sermon in this series because of the Son of Man and talking about his coming death and his eventual reign over all of creation. They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets. What about you? He asked, who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of John, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. So knowing who Jesus is takes the revelation of the Father. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my, what's the word there? Church. Okay. And the gates of Hades will not overcome it. And I like that it says Hades instead of hell. We can talk about that some other time. There's so much here, I am not going to be able to unpack it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. That's a high mark of authority, heavenly authority given to human beings, given to his church. Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples, this is why he didn't want them to speak up, because he was not the kind of Messiah they assumed. He began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, he said, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. So he was the rock on which the church would be built, and then a few breaths later, he is Satan incarnate. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Then Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? What can anyone give in exchange for their soul? You might translate that as life, your very self. For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what they have done. Truly I say to you, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. So that's a lot, but what I want you to see here is that Jesus is building his church, and it's based on those who know who he truly is and are devoted to him in the sense that they'll follow in his ways, take up their cross and follow in his footsteps, living a life of self-denial and obedience, and he is building them into a church, into a gathering, a movement. And so the big idea from Matthew 16 that I just read is we need to cooperate with Jesus as he builds his church. We need to cooperate with Jesus. Again, it's worth thinking back. What is Jesus doing? If we're going to cooperate with Jesus, let's be clear about what he's doing. He's building a new movement where he calls it my church. It's a movement of followers who are empowered with his authority. He says, I'll give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will have been bound in heaven. It's hard to translate, but what's clear is that he's saying, I want my disciples who are walking in my ways to have the authority of God in their ordinary activities. Now, whatever you make of that, that's a whole lot of authority. But if they're walking in his ways, they can be trusted. Yes? And then he says, the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. And whatever you make of that, it's clear that the church as a movement will win because of Jesus. Jesus ain't going to lose, and his people ain't either. Is that all right if I say that? Okay. So Jesus is building a movement of people who are loyal to him, who know who he is. He's going to suffer and die at this point in the story. He's going to be raised on the third day, and someday he's going to come back and reward everyone according to what they've done. This little passage says, and he says, those of you who are loyal to me, who know who I truly am as revealed by the Father, I'm building you into a movement that will not fail. So what that means is individuals who follow Jesus belong together as his church. This is talking about relationships. Jesus is building a network of relationships among people who are loyal to him. That's what the church is supposed to be. It's not the building. It's not how we do things. It's the family. It's the movement that's built around loyalty to him. So Jesus taught and modeled how to live, particularly how we should relate to one another. And this collection of disciples, this collected group, takes up Jesus' mission by welcoming new disciples into his family and practicing friendship and love for one another the way Jesus taught and modeled. So the church is meant to, whatever else we do, we're meant to build relationships with other people who are loyal to him. That's more important than anything else we do because that's who we are. So if all of our activities are not helping us build relationships where we actually practice the teachings and example of Jesus together and we hold on to hope until he returns and we draw new people into the family by telling his story over and over, then whatever else we're doing, we're not a church. So Jesus is building his church. I would ask you, are you cooperating with that or are you resisting? Maybe a better question that you're going to see more and more in the coming months and years is, which relationships and ministries are you currently investing in? OK, because you have a limited amount of time and resources. You have some skills, but not all the skills. You have some gifts, not all the gifts. How are you being intentional in investing in this network of relationships? And if it's not here, then I would say, are you loyal to Jesus? And if you say yes, and if it's not here, then I would say it should be somewhere. Because Jesus is gifting you so that you would invest that in a specific group of disciples of Jesus. Okay? But you might say, well, Jesus was talking about one, like one church, the universal church, all Christians of all times. And so you might say, well, my membership in his church is settled by a spiritual change. Jesus changed me. I know him, and I have this personal relationship. I don't need to be a member of a specific church. I don't need to sign a covenant or whatever. I don't see where I need to join a local congregation. And that's a great question to ask. And for our answer, we're going to look at Matthew 18, okay? There's not going to be the word membership in chapter 18, but it's another place where Jesus mentions church. Matthew 18, starting in verse 1, I'm going to read verses 1 through 20, again in the NIV, and I'll try to unpack it. Remember, I'm trying to persuade you to become a member of a church. Matthew 18, starting in verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Such an important question to ask, right? Whoa. Not really. And Jesus kind of puts them back on track. Verse 2, he called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." He's not talking about naivety. He's very much talking about no one comes into the kingdom of heaven with status. We come in as nobodies and in need of everything that Jesus has to offer. Otherwise, we don't come in. And because of that, Jesus has something to say about how we treat one another. That's where the chapter kind of turns. Look at verse 6. "If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea." We will have our practice of that. That's going to be a new church practice out back when we're done. Thank you for laughing. It's obviously an exaggeration, but he's wanting us to take seriously how our relationships impact one another. Verse 7, "Woe to the world because of things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come, but woe to the person through whom they come." So he's saying, take responsibility for yourself. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. We have knives out back for when we're done. Again, thank you for laughing. It's an exaggeration, but he doesn't want you to take this lightly. "It's better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and to be thrown into the eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and to be thrown in the fire of hell." Jesus says in verse 10, "See that you don't despise one of these little ones." Anyone who believes in him, who comes in with no status, who becomes a disciple of Jesus, "don't despise them," he says. "For I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven." Now, I don't know exactly what that means, but that might be the basis for a guardian angel idea right here in the words of Jesus. We might all have guardian angels. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 in the hills and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he's happier about the one sheep than about the 99 that didn't wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish. See how he's connecting the idea of going after a brother or sister who is wandering off? Like, we take our own tendency to stumble seriously. We take their well-being and they're continuing in the faith seriously. And then he drops the metaphor. Verse 15, "If your brother or sister sins, go and point out the fault just between the two of you. If they listen, you have won them over. But if they won't listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. That's drawn from the book of Deuteronomy. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector, someone on the outside who needs to come back in by repenting and joining the family. Verse 18, truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Does this sound familiar? Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly I tell you that if two or three on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am with them. That's a familiar verse, right? So I think this is where Jesus is making it very particular about people who love him and are loyal to him have to have not generalized connections to other disciples, but very specific connections, very specific relationships. If you're going to be loyal to Jesus, you need to have specific relationships with a network of other believers. And Jesus needs to be the thing that binds you together, not your skin color, not your socioeconomic status, not even necessarily the language you speak. It needs to be Jesus. So for our day and age, I think church membership is the best way for that to work. So I would say give other believers permission to hold you accountable in practice. That's kind of what church membership is meant to be. It doesn't always function that way. But we need to give one another permission to hold me, to hold you accountable in practice. Because Jesus taught that we're accountable to him for how we treat one another. And he gave three illustrations of this. First, that extreme action. He says, if your eye or your foot or your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off, gouge it out, throw it away. It's better to be maimed and to stay loyal than to keep your body intact and to fall away. And then he gave the other illustration where it's like a shepherd who goes after one lost sheep. So the shepherd wants you and me to go after the lost sheep. And so, in a way, we need to have permission to do that. We need to say, you know what? I want you to look out for me, and I'll look out for you. That's kind of what church membership is meant to be. And then in the passage that I didn't read is a long story that Jesus, he tells a parable about a king who forgives his servants. This one has a huge debt that a servant realistically could never pay back in his lifetime. And the servant falls down before the king and says, have mercy on me, and I promise I'll pay you back. And the king, out of mercy, not because he believes the servant would pay him back, out of mercy, he says, I forgive you. And that servant goes, and he finds somebody who owes him a day or two worth of work, that amount of money, and he starts to beat him and choke him and says, throw this guy into prison until he can pay me back every little penny. And the king hears about it and calls back that servant. He says, I forgave you so much, and I expect you to forgive people who owe you little. And Jesus wraps up the story, and he says, same way, Father in heaven will not forgive you if you do not forgive one another from the heart. So he's building up this picture of relationships where we're accountable to one another for how we act. And the goal is that we would all look out for one another and have these relationships where we are so much in one another's lives that if one of us wanders away, we'll go and pull back and rescue. And if I'm the problem and I notice it, then I would cut off my hand or gouge out my eye. Or if one of us offends one another, since the Lord is among us, that we would go and make right with one another. And so it's this picture of relationships. And in verses 15 to 20, right there in the middle, where he's not using a metaphor or illustrations, Jesus gives authority to the gathered church to sort out broken relationships. That's what we're meant to do. We're meant to sort out broken relationships. Not that we need to have everything from a microphone, but we need to feel some responsibility for one another. And I think church membership in our day and age is a helpful way for that to work. So in our times, we ask that you would make your commitment to church official and public. They didn't need to have church membership in the early centuries because no one would dare join the movement or join the church if they weren't all in anyway. Baptism wasn't a cultural, social, celebrated thing. It was a dangerous thing. More like baptism in countries where Christianity is not the majority today. Baptism marks you out as not belonging to the majority anymore in many countries in our world today. But in North America, it's comfortable. It doesn't get you in any kind of trouble. And so that's why we ask you to make your commitment to specific people official and public. There's some benefits, maybe. Let me see if I can try to persuade you a little bit more. For one, it makes planning our gatherings a little easier if we know that some people intend to be here more often than not. But it also makes, for you, your own progress and maturity more likely to happen if you are committed to people. Because when you're just abstractly, I love Jesus, but I'm not committed to anyone in particular, then you can excuse yourself from all kinds of stuff. It's not my responsibility. That attitude gets us out of all kinds of stuff, right? I don't know if you ever say those words out loud. I don't know if you ever say those words out loud, but we can excuse ourselves from all kinds of things when we think, well, that's not my responsibility. Church membership is a way of saying, these people in particular are my responsibility, and I am willing to accept it. So it will benefit you in growing up in the ways of Jesus to say, yes, I'm committed to these people in particular. You can't practice love for the whole universal church all at once. You can generally say, I like them. I don't know most of them. I'm for them rather than against them. But I'm going to show it in particular to some specific people. It also has the benefit for others who are members of this church for the idea of giving and receiving. Because God has given other followers of Jesus the gifts that you need, and they should practice. And they're working up whatever lesson, but you don't bring your kids. Or they're working up, they're praying for you and want to encourage you, but they haven't seen you in 6 weeks. Or they are setting out chairs for you and you're not coming and putting your butt in those chairs or whatever it is. Other people have gifts that God has given them for you, and if you are not committed and regularly around, then how are they going to use their gifts for you? But also they need the gifts that you have. God is stirring up things in you. By the Holy Spirit, if you're a follower of Jesus, God is doing in you something and several somethings that other people need. You're not meant to just come here and soak and sit and, you know, receive other people's gifts. You actually are meant to contribute, and so that we come to need one another. That's the way church is meant to work. So church membership is a way of saying, I'm committed to investing in these people. And I know that they are committed to investing in me, and God will empower us to do both. And then for the staff, it's a frightening thing when I read through some of the places in the New Testament. There's some places in 1 Timothy and Hebrews that talk about me being accountable to God for his children. That's frightening. If I have to answer for you and I don't even know your name, I mean, you laugh. That doesn't excite me at all. If I'm supposed to pray for you and you won't give me your information, that didn't help me at all. If I'm accountable to God for you, please, please let me know. Please let the other pastors know. Let the staff know. That would be really helpful. This is me. I'm whining. This is what whining sounds like whenever I do it. I don't want to answer to God for people that I don't know. That just seems unfair. So if you're going to be around and I'm going to have to answer for you, or Brock or Tim or anyone on staff or any of the deacons, if we're going to have to answer for you, please join. It would be so much better so much easier. Okay, I'm done with that. All right, a few analogies that might help you. If you're not persuaded yet, I have a couple of analogies that might help. Church membership is sort of like defining our relationships. Or we put terms to our partnerships, right? Like, I expect this of you and you expect this of me. We'll maybe put it into a contract if we're going to work together, if we're going to consult, if we're going to have a limited time frame. Like, it's normal for our relationships to have definition. Marriage, holy cow. But whenever there's no definition, whenever there's, it's just, I'll show up if I feel like it. You should be thankful that I showed up. If that's your attitude, you're more like fans or shoppers. And again, if you have another way to apply Jesus' teaching about you must be committed to his people, if you have another way to apply it, and nothing I'm saying really lands and doesn't strike your conscience, power to you. I love it. Go do what Jesus said. But please let me know that I'm not going to be accountable to the Lord for you. That would be helpful. Don't be a fan. Don't be a shopper. Actually, be a disciple. Join his family. Because love in general isn't enough. You say you love everybody. It's just when it gets particular that it gets kind of hard to love real, actual people. And when the composition, the membership of the church changes, it makes loving hard. Like, I loved the church when it was comfortable and my age group was the majority and we sang the kind of songs that my age group likes and the people in my socioeconomic class were the ones who were in charge and it was great and I loved that. But now, you know, our attitude is, well, now church has changed so much, whatever. Again, it's time for me to grow up if that's my attitude and to love like Jesus loved, because the movement changes. The family is adding new members and is evolving, and some people are aging out, going on to glory. And love in general is not enough. We have to follow Jesus by loving particular people. So let me ask you another question on the side of how powerful relationships can be. Do you have someone that you can talk to about real issues you're facing? If you don't, I want church to be, I want this group of people to be that for you. Not everyone in general, but let's find someone in particular. So how are you showing your commitment to Jesus? What are your practices of love for other disciples say about your love for Jesus? Our mission statement says, Allsbury exists to love Jesus by loving each other. We show our loyalty to him and our loyalty to one another. And it's, the world's too big and the church universal is too big for us to practice that toward everyone. So we say, we're going to practice it toward these specific people. We're going to show these people our loyalty to Jesus. What does your practice of love for other disciples say about your love for Jesus? And then an honest question, because I don't want to put numbers on it, but a lot of folks around have been hurt by churches, yes? So how have bad experiences with church affected the way you deal with Jesus' teachings? If a church has hurt you, does that mean you don't have to be committed to his people? I don't think so, but it does mean we have to navigate it a little more carefully. And one of the things that I appreciate about Allsbury is we try to be sensitive to that stuff. And if you will speak up and share your concerns, not rant in a huge crowd, but have a personal conversation, we want to help you heal. We want to be a place where folks who have been hurt by church are safe and find their love for Jesus and their love for his people reinvigorated. Okay? Let's pray. King Jesus, we want to be about you. We want to be about your mission. We want to love your church the way you love your church and gave yourself up for us. Lord, I always need help making that particular. The big grand idea, I can get behind that, but it's the particulars that make demands of me, or I can't put myself first anymore. That's where it gets really hard. Where I have to let go of my preferences and looking out for me first. Where I have to be vulnerable. Lord, I ask that you would bring us along. Move us along in maturity. To walk in love. As the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve and to lay down his life as a ransom for many. Holy Spirit, I ask that you would fill us so that we would walk in love as Jesus did. Holy Spirit, empower us so that we would have the same gifts and abilities and power of Jesus to minister to one another. So we wouldn't gather together and go home hungry. We wouldn't gather together and go home empty and alone, but we would gather together and experience your presence together. Jesus, you said when we gather in your name, you're among us. We look for that. We look for you.